Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. As you might have guessed, my name is Patrick Madrid, and my number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. So much to talk about. We're kind of dwelling for a while on the phenomenon of men between the ages of 25 and 54. There was a study that I shared with you earlier in the program today, and Cyrus has posted that so you can peruse it for yourself. But some interesting things emerge from this picture of this ever-growing number of men who could work and who don't. And we're considering right now, what are the implications, not only for the person himself, for the man himself, and this, to some extent, I suppose, extends to women. It just so happens that this particular study was looking at the male of the species. And some conclusions, I think, are drawable. And we're looking at some of those implications. You know, what effect does this have on the man himself? And to what extent does that deteriorate his ability to, you know, we've been talking in terms of functioning as a husband or a father or a worker, but we haven't even really delved at all into the whole spiritual dimension of things. Because obviously this life is temporary and we're only here for 70 and then maybe a little bit more if you're lucky. And then we're off to eternity. And this life is a temporary sojourn. This is not our real home. It's not our permanent home, maybe is the best way to put it. We're on our way to eternity. So I'm thinking too in terms of like the spiritual component of all this. If because of circumstances you don't have to work, think about the idle rich, the wealthy people who don't have to work. I mean, that's a separate category of person. The wealthy people who have just got so much money that they never ever have to worry about anything from, you know, like a bill standpoint. Everything's paid for. Everything will be paid for. Now, the idle rich, if they're idle, what do they spend their time doing? Now, I mean, there are plenty of people who are rich who are very industrious, who are busy all the livelong day doing and creating and, you know, all. I'm not suggesting that people who are rich are idle, but there are some people who are rich who are idle. And what does that do to them? How does that affect them? I mean, if you become accustomed to a life of constant entertainment and relaxation and having everything at your fingertips without having to do anything, without having to exert yourself in any way, what toll would that take on you? And how would that affect things like prayer? I mean, where is there any room for God if you have everything already at your fingertips? I could see the average human being just saying, well, I don't really need God. Yeah, I'll ask God for stuff if I, you know, something's going on. Please, God, don't let my stock prices go down or, you know, some frivolous thing like that. But do you really expect somebody who's living in the lap of luxury to pray or to strive? And what about things like self-control and striving to cultivate virtue? Where's the incentive to do that? Human beings being what we are, it seems as though the incentive, it diminishes to maybe the point of not even being there anymore. Now, it's a different situation, the idle rich, compared to somebody who is not rich, but who is idle because he can be, and he has all of the conveniences of life. There's food in the refrigerator, there's an internet connection, there's a gaming system, there's, you know, he's warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and he doesn't really have to do anything. Does that, to you, strike you as a scenario in which somebody is going to become a saint, to put it bluntly? I don't think so. I don't think it's, I think you've got the whole system stacked against you in that way. So that's just another reason for us to consider, to what extent is this a good trend? I don't think it's a good trend, generally speaking, where people can just get paid not to work and sit around and do nothing, whether it's games or what. It's not good for them in the long run. Jennifer in Minneapolis, thank you for waiting so patiently. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I really do have to run, but I just wanted to put out there, does the study talk at all about men that have chosen to be stay-at-home dads? Because that is another important factor. I know quite a few men in my life have now done that, and I greatly appreciate that because it's you know, it just adds a different perspective. But I do have to run. I'll listen later. Okay. Thank you so much for your show.
Fair enough. Thank you for the call. It may be in the footnoting of the article, in the links that go to subsections, it may be in there somewhere, but it's not anything overt in the study. So I don't know how many men would fit into that profile within the bigger picture of 7 million men who could work but don't. That'd be interesting to find out. I just don't know the answer. But thankfully, the article is posted on the show Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show, rather. And you can access it and dig down if you'd like to. It's also available on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick.
Patrick?
How about Michael now in Las Vegas? Yeah, Cyrus.
I was just going to ask, did you ever play the stay-at-home dad role in, you know, with any of your kids?
Never did. So in our situation, I was working a very menial job in construction before a couple of months before Nancy and I got married. I got laid off because there was a downturn in business. And so I was making $5 an hour, and I lost that job because they laid the crew off that I was working on. And so that would have been just after Thanksgiving. Yay, holiday time, no job. So I scrambled, and I got a job at a bank. And I wasn't a teller, but I got a job in whatever the department was I was working in. And so I got that job, and I believe that that job was paying me about $600 a month gross. Wow. And so I had that job. It was a full-time job. And we got married about 4 or 5 weeks after I got that job. And we took a week off for our honeymoon, unpaid. Came back, worked another month or two, maybe 2 months at the most. And then I got laid off again because the bank had a downturn. And the guy who hired me got laid off. And I got laid off. And a bunch of other people got laid off. So now I'm without a job. And I'm newly married. Thankfully, my wife had a... she was like a preschool teacher. So man, did I scramble. And then I got a job in retail. And I mean, it's terrible hours, long, long hours and not much pay, but I had no choice. I had to scramble and scramble and scramble. And I'm glad I did. I mean, I'm not saying look at me, you know, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying in my own experience, it would have been disastrous if I had not gone out there and tried to work. Now, my wife's income, of course, once the baby started coming, she wasn't able to work in any case outside the home. She did plenty of work in the home, that's for sure. But it was just economic reality. There was no way we could have survived if I didn't get out there and hustle. So I did. Yeah. And I'll bet that's what you did.
It almost the same thing. I had gotten laid off and my wife was still working. And so we entertained the idea. You know, it's like I always thought it'd be fun to be a stay-at-home dad. It wasn't fun at all. It was hard. It was really, really, really hard. And
what was hard about it?
Everything. I think men
deciding
created
what to watch on
work.
TV or what?
Men created work to get out of the house. I was going stir crazy. And
how long did that last?
Oh, maybe 2 months. Maybe not even a long time. And it was just it was an infant. It wasn't even. It shouldn't have been as hard. But it just told me it's like this is not. This is not fun time. So like maybe some of these stay-at-home dads, maybe that's what it's like for them, is they just pop in the video games and you know,
maybe.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But
I have nothing against stay-at-home dads. I mean, I don't want anyone to feel judged. No heat, no judgment. I mean, it's not for me in any case to judge anybody. But I could never do that. Just me as a person, me as a man.
And that's what I learned about myself. Exactly.
I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it. The moms who stay home, even the dads who stay home, it's commendable. It's hard. It's really, really a hard, thankless job.
Thankfully now, you can, I mean, just with the era of Zoom and the internet and all that, you can stay at home and work at home and be completely productive in that regard. and do it at home and maybe share responsibilities with kids and things. So, but that none of those things existed, of course, 40 some odd years ago when we were newlyweds. You had to be at your job. If you were not at your job, you didn't eat. You didn't get paid. You know how it is. Let's go to Michael in Las Vegas. Michael, thank you for calling.
Hey, Patrick. One of the things that I guess I'm seeing in kind of the corporate world when it comes to the dropouts in this age range, which mm-hmm. I'm in, is that there's really been an increase in the past 20, maybe 30 years in this kind of culture of nepotism. So it's really becoming more and more difficult for your merits to get you noticed, advanced. And I'm seeing a lot of people burn out because of this. They're just getting really frustrated. They don't see any upward mobility, no matter how many hours they put in, no matter how many achievements they have. And I'm not talking, you know, I haven't gotten a raise in 6 months, or I haven't gotten a promotion 6 months after joining a company. I'm talking about people who've been there for 5 years and have seen and have really contributed. And instead, it'll be something like, you know, the head of the company will hire the neighbor's son, right, to lead a major effort out of nowhere and just totally.
Statistically, though, is that significantly common? I mean, I don't doubt that happens, but.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. It's been very common in my experience with the dropouts within the corporate world, where they just say, why would I do this? And I would say at least, you know, 3 out of 5 would cite that personally as just being too frustrating to handle. And so they go and, you know, either open up a coffee shop or invest in crypto or something where they don't really have to care anymore. So I just want to point that out as maybe a little bit of an example of maybe part of our society has gone a little bit wrong when it comes to encouraging that nepotism, encouraging, I'll leave it there.
If you were given the offer by the government, Michael, you know, whatever, federal or, hey, listen, we'll pay you enough money to make your monthly needs, and you don't have to work for it, and you can just stay home and do whatever you want with your time. That's up to you. Would you go for that if it was offered to you?
Absolutely not. No, but that was how I was raised. I get that. What I'm just referencing what I'm seeing. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to stand up for these guys a little bit because I've seen this so frequently, and this is within the corporate world. This is within the sort of high-tech world, right? And it's,
so if you're a guy, let me play devil's advocate. If you're a guy who has any sense of self-worth and desire to rise above and any ambition, I mean, wouldn't the average guy in that scenario, if there's nepotism going on, wouldn't he just say, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to go find a job where I don't have to deal with nepotism and then go find that job because they're out there. I mean, it's not as though every job is ruled by nepotism.
It's not that every job is, but it's becoming increasingly common in the corporate culture that, this person gets hired for whatever and yada, yada. And I can see their frustration. And luckily, my dad was very different in terms of raising us with a certain set of standards and morals, and you have to work. But, you know, the guys maybe 10 years younger than me, who maybe didn't necessarily have that or grew up in a slightly different era. There's nothing to reinforce that so that when they're seeing those challenges, they say, you know what? This is too much for me. I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to find that place. Right. They just sort of assume after 2, maybe 3 jobs that this goes on everywhere and they drop out.
Interesting. I that never popped up on my radar screen as an issue, but you know, I don't know. I haven't seen what you've seen. That's an interesting angle, Michael. I appreciate your time. Thank you. How about Derek now in Minneapolis? Good morning, Derek.
Good morning. So I'm given a little bit of insight as to everything you've been talking about. I'm 27. Uh-huh. I'm unemployed and I'm a stay-at-home dad. So I work road construction. I'm unemployed all winter and am at home, avid gamer. And as to
So you're like the test. You're like the, you are the demographic that we're talking about.
Yeah,
right now.
Exactly what Perfect. You guys have been talking about.
All right.
But not just speaking for myself, but a lot of the people that are my age and that are doing the same things, I think a huge, huge portion of it comes down to mental health. People use video games as an escape from their realities of their bad grades in college or their work life that they hate, that they know they need to keep going to. They come home and they want to find those fantasy realities, whatever, that keep their brain from thinking about the terrible things going on. We've been in a pandemic for 2 years. That's severely affected the youth's mental health. That's where I would.
I can see that. And that makes sense to me. I can see all that. Yeah. So how do you cope? I mean, you don't have to get overly personal unless you want to. How do you cope with that as a reality in your own life?
For me, I've been fortunate enough not to be severely affected by things like the pandemic because the road construction industry hasn't stopped. When I get laid off, it's a seasonal layoff. I live in Minneapolis, so when it snows, we don't work.
What about working for a snow plow company or the company
there's a lot of guys that spread the sand and the salt on the road. Yeah. Especially if you have a CDL, you can go out, work for the state, whatever. I choose to stay at home with my young kids. I have a kid 1 and 3 or 2 and 3. I want to spend time with them while I can. But when I'm done taking care of those kids, as you guys were saying, taking care of kids as a stay-at-home dad can be a lot. I give major props to my fiance who does it while I'm off on the road all summer. But it can be a lot. And
have you guys set a date?
A date? Yeah, it's in August this year.
Congratulations.
Finance-wise, works a lot better. But that's how I see it, is it's a coping mechanism to where we're at as a whole, as a country. Once you own it, it doesn't cost anything most of the time to just press the power button and escape for a while.
So when the metaverse rolls out, Derek, and you're the prime demographic, obviously, when the metaverse rolls out and everything moves toward the metaverse, the immersion in artificial reality, I had my first experience with it about a week ago, and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I've talked about it so often on the program, I thought I understood it. I realized I didn't understand it till I put the VR headset on. Now I understand it, or I think I do anyway. So what happens when the metaverse rolls out and there's universal basic income and you don't have to go out and stand with a slow sign or a stop sign at a road work, and you could be home and you could be in the metaverse? Does it seem reasonable to assume, as I do, that more and more and more and more people are going to gravitate toward that because it is that kind of anesthesia that will dull whatever other pain they're dealing with finances or bad grades or bad relationship or what have you? What's your sense of it?
Absolutely. I think that it will increase, especially with programs like Twitch, where now people can make money for playing those games. There's incentives to want to stay home and do that work if you're good enough at or entertaining enough. So there's more and more things telling people, hey, you can stay at home and be okay with that. It would never work for me, the whole VR thing. I get incredibly motion sick. I had a VR headset for all of a week and had to sell it because it made me incredibly sick. But I do think that as this metaverse starts rolling out, be it the Epic Games or Facebook's, more and more people will be transitioning to want to stay at home and live those kinds of lives. Maybe not the parents or the families, but especially single men. It's an appealing option.
It is, and that's what makes it so, I don't know, it's so ominous, if you ask me. Talk about an opiate of the masses. I think this is that on steroids. Hey, Derek, thank you. God bless you. I'll be right back.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity Healthshare.
Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
St. Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 3:10, he says, if anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat, which can come across as pretty harsh, but I think it's wise. I mean, if somebody is not willing to work and pull his weight, and I don't mean he only in terms of men, but men or women. I mean, are freebies and handouts and universal basic income, as attractive as that is, let's face it, it is attractive, free money. A friend of mine texted me, it's not the government's money, it's my money. Well, yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. It's your tax money. It's coming back to you. But regardless, is it in your best interest? Is it in society's best interest for you to have a guaranteed basic income that would enable you to not work if you could and just stay at home and do whatever you wanted to? We've talked a fair amount about gaming, and I think that's fair game. Haha, get it? I think that's fair game because the gaming systems rule the world nowadays and countless people have them. I've got nothing against them. I'm not opposed to it. I would argue for moderation in everything. But in any case, I'm not blaming gaming systems. I'm just saying, how is this going to affect you, your kids, society, if we get to the point where not only do we have the allure of the metaverse where your body is going to look whatever avatar you want and you're going to be in this virtual reality, which I found out within the last week is extremely realistic and powerful, even though it's in what I think of as the 8-track tape phase of the technology. It's just going to get so much more powerful, so much more indiscernible from reality. And if that reality is more fun and you can escape from the drudgery of the workaday world, why wouldn't you? And I don't mean you necessarily personally, but the average person. And if there's universal basic income and there's no real incentive to work, a lot of people are going to say, well, then why should I work? Why can't I just stay home and enjoy? And what will that do to the individual person? And what will that do to society? I haven't really talked about that from my own standpoint. But I'll tell you one thing I can see is it's absolutely put you in a position of being completely controlled by the government or by big companies or by people who run big companies. I'm thinking of Mark Zuckerberg, for example. You put yourself in a position of being manipulated and used and probably a profit center for companies. You know, maybe they'll figure out a way if you're in the metaverse and you've got your universal basic income and all that energy that you're physically expending by being in the metaverse all the time, they'll figure out a way to harness that to mine for Bitcoin or whatever the next thing like Bitcoin is, and they'll figure out a way to monetize you. And I don't want to be monetized. I don't want to live that way. I don't want to be off the grid. I enjoy the benefits of day-to-day life. I like air conditioning and electricity and internet connections. And I like all that as much as the next person does. But so on the one hand, I'm not arguing that we should pull entirely away from this. But at the same time, if you're not careful, I foresee that this is going to become like a net that is gradually being gathered around us as a society, and it may feel really comfortable. It may feel really pleasant to be in that net because all of your needs are met by that net. And you have everything that you want in terms of creature comforts, and there's no longer, if it gets to this point, no longer any real incentive to go out and push yourself and get up early and get in the car and go to work and all the things that go along with that, because you have to in order to pay your bills. If all those necessities are catered to and taken care of, you're in a prime position to be controlled, manipulated, and monetized. I don't see any way around that, quite honestly. I'm curious to know what you think. Let's go now to Kathy in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I guess one of the things we really hadn't touched on is, well, I've raised my kids pretty much the same way you raised yours, because that's how I was raised. My dad's 80, will not retire till he dies. He owns his own business. But we grew up with, there was more fathers in the home at the time. Now look at the divorce rates and less fathers there for their children. Who's going to teach them to have, take pride and want to do, you know, work and have a job when, I mean, even back in the day, if your parents were divorced, the majority of the neighbors still had, you know, two parents in the home that helped kind of raise you or teach, you know, your child. But there's moms out working or moms home collecting unemployment or welfare, and these kids, they're not learning from that. So, I mean, that, that they grow up with no knowledge of how to
so
be
you see
adult
divorce
or what
as
to do.
part of the contribute, it's a contributing factor. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, that along with not having the father in their life. I think
what happens in a home, Kathy? Let's extend it beyond that. What happens in a home where maybe dad is there, but the kids grow up seeing dad with a virtual reality headset on most of the day, and he's gaming most of the day.
And that's
going to
teach those kids to, that's how they were raised, and that's how they're going to be. That's because that's all they know. We're not doing our kids any, you know, service here by teaching, if we can't teach them to be responsible adults. I tell my kids the same thing with religion. If you can't raise your children and teach them, what are you going to, what are they going to have to offer to their children as they grow up? We have,
and there are plenty of other people out there who will be more than happy to step in and raise your children ideologically if you don't shoulder that burden yourself. They're waiting in the wings to do that for you.
And I think by giving them that responsibility, like how you raised your children, and that we, I mean, we're, none of us are perfect parents, but we try to do the best for our children and hope that they come back one day and say that we did a good job, or that our tough love taught them to be better people.
I have a hypothetical for you, Kathy. Your kids are grown up now, so are mine. But let's say that you are a young mom right now, and you had 3-4 kids in grammar school coming up through the ranks. And it's now, you know, with the metaverse looming and virtual reality and gaming systems and the internet, all that. What would you be telling your kids now if you were a young mom? And what would be, would there be any of these things that you would not allow them to have? Or what would your policies be if you were raising those kids right now?
I can kind of relate, because I have several grandkids that are younger, and I would probably do what I see the mothers or the fathers and them doing now. My grandson that is 9 got an Xbox. He's been wanting one for a while, but he didn't just get the Xbox for Christmas. He got a chart that came with it with chores and attitude. And add and minus, he gets chores. He earns time on the gaming system.
I see.
If he takes attitude, he loses time. But it's also, he's limited to only a certain amount of time on there, because they push the reading and other things, which
That's
it's
smart.
Kind of a happy medium.
So you'd let them have a taste of it, but it would not be unrestricted, and it would also be merit-based, right? They have access to the games only if they perform in the other areas.
Yes, and if they're disrespectful to their parents, they lose time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's wise. I hope a lot of young parents who are raising their kids right now just listen to what you said, Kathy. Thank you. Mark in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, you are on the air now. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. I've been listening to the talk since you started on this this money thing. And, you know, I have a tendency to lean towards being one of those people that would maybe say yes to that. I'm 50. I've worked since I was 18, so I'm not afraid of work. I've always had good jobs. But, You know, for a guy like me, I take care of my mother with Alzheimer's, and there are so many days where I wake up and I think, you know, I wish that I could just stay home and take care of her and not have to go to work. Yeah. And not have to get her out in the cold and bring her to that day center. I've had some very horrific stories in home care and outside care.
And I can understand why you feel that way.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying I can relate to you. I can understand why you might want to break from that.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I want to be the one that takes care of my mom. I don't want to have to bring her anywhere, and I don't want to have to bring people in. It has not been good. Right. So that's one of the reasons where I would, you know, I could finally do that. I could finally just not have to get up and get her out in the cold and get her dressed and battle and this kind of stuff and ship her off. And I could, and the other reason is, you know, I'm an artist, and my gift from God has always been the gift of painting, vision, and being able to see and see color and produce beautiful paintings. And I do so very well. You know, I get to paint and I get to put artwork in galleries. But I think, you know, at 50, if somebody said, hey, we were willing to pay you to stay home, I feel like at 50, that would be my one chance to make that work. Because, you know, up to this point, I have never, ever had an opportunity to create to my full potential, because I get what's left after I come home and I'm tired. And I, you know, there's two reasons for me that I would be inclined to lean for a while and say, yes, you know, I would love to do that. I could.
But I think the thing for that I'm understanding from you, Mark, and it makes sense to me, quite frankly, is that you would not cease being productive. In fact, if anything, it sounds like you'd become more productive.
Yeah. Well,
which is different from the guy who just sits at home, whether he's on the game system or not, when he could be out working. He's unproductive in any meaningful sense. That's the big difference.
And you know, I don't have a computer that's hooked up to the internet. I don't have a flat screen TV. I still have the box TV. I don't even have an antenna. I have a TV that's hooked up to a DVD so I can watch a movie. That's it. So as far as being addicted to some kind of screen time, not going to happen. It never has. So, I'd be one of those guys that would say yes to that.
Well, you know what? In your case, Mark, especially being that you would be freed up to be more productive in your actual work of creating art, I would see that as a good thing, especially since you would be free of the distractions of the screen time and such. So you to me seem like an outlier in a good way. The average person, though, is not in your situation, and therefore I think is likely to deteriorate for lack of productivity. Mark, thank you. And before I go on to the next call, I just want to kind of reiterate the whole idea of, let's not forget, when we're talking about income and productivity, let's not forget the whole other part of the picture, which is your spiritual state. And what does this do? Does this eat away at your spiritual vitality? I'm here to say absolutely it would. 100% absolutely. It would be the analogous version of never getting any exercise, always sitting down, always eating and resting and never moving. Analogously, that's, I think, inevitable if somebody has a life of unlimited leisure and rest and never has to work, never has to sacrifice. Where is God going to be in the middle of all that? You may say, well, that'll just give me more time to pray. Yeah, on paper, maybe, or in theory, maybe. But in actual fact, do you think that we would see a generation of people who are excelling in virtue and moderation, you know, as a result of not having to work, not having to get out there and push themselves? I absolutely see a huge detriment just from the spiritual standpoint. But that's just me, although I do think I'm right. Let's go to Mike now in Philadelphia. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Patrick. Yeah, I just want to talk about, I believe there's a political thing behind all of this and political agenda and these kids and people that are on drugs, and they're all getting a check, a Social Security disability check, and it's like the easier, softer way. And I believe the abnormal becomes normal to them, and they don't know any better anymore. It's so easy for them not to work and get a check and they get diagnosed with bipolar or some kind of diagnosis where they can get a check. And And I believe it's more, it's spiritual too. Like there's no God in their lives. Like we're born in the image and likeness of God. And like, I believe like you're going to do the right thing. You get up, you work.
What about all the people though, Mike, who, I mean, I don't know, proportionate to the whole, I don't know how many, I don't have any statistics, but isn't it true that there are a lot of people who really are clinically afflicted with some of these mental illnesses or depression or something? I mean, there clearly are people who are not putting on an act just to get money. We need to help them though, right? We have to look after those people, don't we?
There probably is, Patrick, but there's so many people being diagnosed with that or misdiagnosed that are getting a check. Like for real, like in the real world, this is happening more and more. And the parents are just as bad. Like they're seeing it and let it go on and letting them kids control them. And it's all because of they don't have no spirituality and they don't have no God in their lives. Like they stop believing. And another thing is like with these rich people and the seven deadly sins, like they're so greedy and they can't get enough, you know.
Well, fair enough, Mike. That's true of human beings in general, though. I know personally some very wealthy people who are extremely diligent in helping others. They're very generous. Now, this may not describe all wealthy people or maybe not even most. But rather than paint with such a broad brush, what if this happened, Mike? What if the government evolved to the point where it said, all right, everybody's getting a basic universal income. Everybody. And you don't have to be diagnosed with anything to get the check. And you're just going to get the check. And it's going to pay for your monthly amount. Would you accept it?
It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop there. And then.
Well, okay, fair enough. I'm just saying, but let's talk about that for a minute. If the government rolls this out and says every American above a certain age is going to get the check, would you take it?
No, you know what, Patrick, I believe today and there's gods in my life and there's a reason for everything. But until you believe and recognize that, you're going to take that. You're going to be manipulated. You're going to let them control you. But
would you accept the check? The universal basic income, or would you opt out?
Listen to me, Patrick. I wouldn't have to because I would be doing the right thing. I would be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
So that's a no. You wouldn't take the check.
People are feeding into that. People are feeding into that, and this is why this is this political agenda with the immigrants and coming into the country and taking care. They want them to take care of the other of the jobs that we're all losing. They're hoping that they take care of them, and it's a voting
I don't know if you've
thing.
Been looking at the. I don't know if you've been looking at the job market, Mike. There are far more jobs than there are people to fill those jobs, and companies are struggling to attract anybody to come and work and do a lot of these jobs that are not all of which are terrible jobs. Some are actually quite nice jobs. They just can't get people to work.
Well, they keep the border open long enough, and they'll be filled. They keep the border, and they get their voting, and they'll keep the Democrats
in there.
Yeah,
the border's about as open as it's ever been, and the reality is there's lots of jobs that they just can't fill. I'll tell you something, Mike. Well, if they said universal basic income for everybody, and you can opt out if you want to, I would take the check. You know why I would take the check? I wouldn't stop working. I would continue to do what I do. But if I could recoup some of my tax dollars and then repurpose that, you know, for homeless people or soup kitchens or other things like that, helping people who need it, I can see a lot of benefit to that. But where I see the problem, and it sounds like you and I are in agreement on this issue, is the way in which it would just cause so many people to fall asleep. And they would just...
It's because they don't believe there's no spirituality in this. We're losing it. We're losing it. If you can't see it, you can't do anything about anything until you recognize it. And if you can't recognize it, they are going to manipulate and take advantage of you. And it's sad,
there you
but
go.
True.
That you're preaching my gospel right there, Mike. I agree with you. A lot of people would definitely fall into that category. Thank you. Quick time out. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line.
For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Man, does 3 hours go by in a flash? I'll tell you what, that's how the Patrick Madrid Show is every day. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Barbara in Visalia, California. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Patrick. You know, I've been listening for the last your show lately, and I can relate to a lot of the callers that have called in. I just want to, I'll try to make it quick as I can. The last so many years, 25 years, I was taught how to, my parents were Catholics and went to church faithfully. Now, my parents taught me at the age of 14, start working in the packing houses and in summer months to earn for your school clothes and so forth. So I think the values that were taught in life to me then, all through the years, you know, I'm grateful to them, even though they divorced after 28 years of marriage. It just, I think it boils down to, because I have difficulties with both my adult children right now. I have a 36-year-old daughter who's a single mother raising my 5-year-old grandson. My 29-year-old son has two of my grandchildren, 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I constantly, constantly hear, they're millennials, I'm a baby boomer, complain, complain, complain. My daughter works, just constant complaints. And so I raised them going to church, and but when they hit their teens, you know, they stopped going, they didn't want to go, and they just lost their faith altogether. So all I'd like to say is that I try to tell them, you know, you've got to give back your faith, you've got to believe in God, you've got to, you know, I had situations a lot that I struggled and everything and so forth, but I prayed all the time on everything, you know. God, if you feel like the doors are closing, another door may open. But it's just the mental mentality that they think these, it's like they want everything easy. Again, it comes with the enabling part too. I didn't enable them. I taught my daughter when she was in high school. She was upset with me because I actually had work experience in high school. She went to work at McDonald's. I said, hey, you want a cell phone? Pay for your cell phone.
Yeah, I am a complete believer. You might have heard me talking about that, Barbara. I completely endorse that view that parents are not doing their children any favors by paying for their cell phones and their car insurance.
Exactly.
And it actually
and the situation
them,
I struggle with my mom, she's 91. She enabled both my kids, unfortunately, for the longest time. And she thinks she was helping them. But I her and I would go around in circles that say, Mom, you know, I think you're doing more damage than good, because, yeah, you know, I don't see it that way, and I don't see it, and I'm a grandma, and I can do what I want. I said, but Mom. So anyway, long story short, you know, they struggle right now. My son is not working. He lost a good job 3 years ago, right before, 2 years ago, I'm sorry, when the pandemic hit, working for, all because his mouth got him into trouble. And, you know, lost a good job, so he has.
I'm sorry to hear that. Barbara, I've got to press forward. I'm sorry to hear about that. But you know what? At least you can look back and not feel a sense of regret, knowing that you did what you could and that you were conscious of the fact that you didn't want to coddle your children unnecessarily. That's good advice. Thank you. Let's go to Paul now in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. How are you? And it's good to have you take
well,
my call.
You.
Muchos café con leche. We are currently in a time where people are just, I think they're really disconnected. For example, the jobs that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years are not even created yet, and people going to college are getting into debt. We have all kinds of jobs here in Wisconsin that are not being filled for welders, for machinists, things like that. And if people would get those education on that front, I think that they would do much better. But I also would like to say, if I may, that
yep,
what we find our current situation to be is hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. And weak men create hard times. And we're currently at the point where the hard times are coming because we do have such weak men.
Yeah, that's a meme that I understand, and I do you know, endorse it in a general sense. I think there's obviously more nuance than what the meme says, but I see the point of that, and I concur with it generally speaking. But the good thing is that unlike the meme, not all men in any given time are good men or weak men. You have a mix of both. You'll always have good men. You'll always have, you know, those who are willing to work, who are brave and adventurous. For me, tell me what you think, Paul, but for me, with the slide now into artificial reality, virtual reality, the metaverse, and maybe if we throw in their universal income, it can take good men and make them weak men. because like water seeks the path of least resistance. And if there's no effort required, there are people who would be willing to make the effort, but because if they don't have to make the effort, they won't make the effort, and things gradually will get soggy. And
I would agree with that. I've recently started doing the program I'm sure you're familiar with called That Man Is You. And we've been doing that through our church, and it's astounding how they play the role of men and how the children suffer because of weak men or men not stepping up to their role in society. And for all your listeners out there, if they have an opportunity, go find a group in your community that's doing That Man Is You. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with them and have been for a long time. So I'm glad that you're finding value with that group. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. How about Mike in Redding, California? Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Patrick. A long time ago, when I was 8 years old, I started working, and I would shovel snow, and I would mow lawns, and then I got a paper route and went from there and learned the values of going to work. Those jobs are not available anymore to the kids. You see the pickup trucks with the lawnmowers in the back. You don't see a kid going down the street pushing a lawnmower. Paper routes, those are adults throwing them from a car in the morning. So they're those simple jobs that would start somebody and give them skills, you know, how to be on time, how to, you know, make sure that your job was done right.
Get
all
up
of those
early.
Skills are totally
all
lacking.
Those things,
Yes, you know, and with the paper, I got my daughter's paper route, and they had to go collect the money, and they had to be on time, and if they weren't going to be able to do it, they had to find somebody to take their place. All of those skills just build in you. The things that will make you successful the rest of your life, and they're not even available anymore.
So what do we do in that case? I mean, obviously you could be a glasses half empty guy or a glasses half full guy. So if you're like I think I am, if you're a glasses half full guy, how do you replace those lost things like paper routes and stuff like that? If they're not coming back, what do we replace them with?
I think it starts with the parents. When I was 14, I went to work for my dad's company at a time when a 14-year-old could work. There weren't laws against it. And so I just progressed up. And if you say to them, if you earn this, you can have it. So that's what I learned. When I earned money, I could have what I wanted. You have to put the carrot out there for them. And you have to get them almost away from all the other kids that sit around and don't do anything. So you teach them.
Is there
to
an alternative to the paper route now? In other words, if that's gone, if that's a cultural phenomenon that we won't see again, what would replace that?
I don't know, because when they're paying $18 an hour in a fast food place, you have adults working in there, because that was really the next step up for a lot of kids, or their first job was going to work, you know, at the burger joint. So it's something that you have to instill in them a sense of pride in what they do. You have to say to them, what do you want to do? Because if somebody's doing something that they want to do and they can make money, they're going to be really successful. So
if they can make money by staying home and getting universal basic income and playing video games, that I can kind of
and that's what
point,
you're going to pass
it?
On to
They'll
another generation. Yeah.
Yeah,
another generation. Yeah, exactly. Then that their kids will see them do that. So this thing, you know, we've got to change it. But I don't know how that's going to turn around.
I don't either, and I don't know if I have any snappy, you know, pithy suggestions on how to do it, other than to resist it. I think that's definitely something we all have to do: be aware of it and resist it. Because like the blob, it can absorb anybody. I mean, it's not just the young people. I mean, if you're older and you're tired of working and you can have your monthly amount paid for by the government, and I think most people to one extent or another will be absorbed into that. And that's what I find maybe the most alarming, is that it's so universal.
Right. The parents have to be paying attention. I took my son to work and taught him in my line of work. And so that when I was gone, he could take my place. You know, he could do things, and it taught him skills. And again, he had to be on time. There were things that had to be done. So just getting, you know, that part of the mentality of being there, and it helped him, because now he goes to work every day. And
that's good. I'm out of time, Mike. Forgive my interruption, but we have to finish up for the day. It's gone by very quickly. I do appreciate everybody's contribution. Excuse me. Please note that this program, as with all the Patrick Madrid shows, will be posted in its entirety at relevantradio.com/Patrick within the hour. So if you missed any part of it, you want to hear it, or you can fire up the Relevant Radio app and listen to it that way. Please share it with your friends and family. Maybe post a link to it on Facebook and continue the conversation. And speaking of which, I will be back in conversation with you again tomorrow. And between now and then, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.